Welcome back to Library Voices SC. I'm Pamela Hoppock, joined today by a new co-host, the amazing Sean Gruber. Sean, thanks for being here. Sean is the South Carolina State Library's public information specialist, right, Sean?
It's good to be here.
I appreciate you sitting in for us today. I also have Anderson Cook here.
Hello.
Hi, Anderson. Thanks for being here. And I am going to give Sean, I'm going to give you the honor of introducing our very special guest to our listeners. So I'm just going to hand it on over to you.
So today we have Dr. John Nelson, the curator of the herbarium within the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of South Carolina. Born and raised here in Columbia, and during his tenure as its curator, the herbarium has more than doubled in terms of accession collections. He's an active plant collector within a variety of field projects within South Carolina and hopes to continue in this capacity as long as his right knee holds out. Thank you for being here, Dr. Nelson.
Thank you, Sean, as long as the other parts hold out, too.
So, Dr. Nelson, first of all, thank you for an amazing talk today, Winter Botany.
Well, it was so much fun, and I see that you had a big old crowd here, and they were, like, coming out of the back door.
We were at capacity. We had to stand outside the room and listen.
It was tremendous fun, and everybody seemed to be sort of grooving on this stuff, and I'm glad of that.
I think, for me, one of the highlights of the talk really was the smelling of sticks.
The smelling of sticks is an important thing when we're looking for characteristics, isn't it?
I think when I was a child, I smelled sticks. Mm-hmm. It was just something that was a natural kid thing to do, and I had forgotten about that.
They're very sticky and worth a smell every
now and then. Well, they have smell. They do. They naturally have different smells, and I just forgotten.
But seriously, Dr. Batson, when I was an undergraduate in his flora class, mm-hmm. he would tell us that we needed to use all of our senses when it came to pulling out characters or characteristics
sure.
of a given plant that we were trying to identify. And he said, don't forget to use your senses of smell as well as taste. Now, we didn't taste anything today. I think that a lot of the people in this crowd might have objected to that. But I tell my students, of course, they always think I'm trying to poison them when I say, taste the berry. You don't have to eat it, but go ahead and taste it.
Sure.
Or taste the stick.
You know, it was oddly nostalgic, actually. We have a lot of black cherry that grows around my family's farm in Hamilton County. So whenever you're smelling the black cherry, it reminded me of breaking the limbs. And, you know, that scent is very strong, that kind of peppery sort of thing for me.
Very characteristic. But I guess the lesson of that is that we do have to, you know, use various ways in which we can, like, pull out those obvious characteristics that are there for our edification.
It's fascinating. So I took a few videos today, which was fun. I saw a lot of people taking notes today, lots of note takers today.
Notes.
And I'm excited that we are planning on bringing you back to the State Library for a urban walk and talk, a little urban botany, maybe right here, right downtown.
Great idea. I mean, the downtown Columbia has a tremendous amount of botany, and it's free. All you got to do is walk around and look at stuff. You can learn a tremendous amount of stuff.
But with a crowd like this, we might have to do it twice.
This was a little bit...
It's a little much for a walk and talk.
Or at least for one walker and talk.
Give you a megaphone.
Yeah. Well, that would be fun, too.
Yeah.
Maybe we could stop traffic.
Do a little parade, a botany parade.
We have a flag at the herbarium.
That's right. You have a great flag.
We could bring that along.
We absolutely should. Get your students to carry the flag.
We could all dress up as Carl Linnaeus.
There you go. You have a picture of him at the... Is that who
we
you have the picture?
We have several pictures.
Of him at the herbarium.
As well as Plant Man.
Plant Man. Oh my gosh. Okay, so we're making references to a lot of things that Anderson and I got to see when we visited the herbarium. And our listeners, just so you know, you too can visit the herbarium. Anderson, would you recommend a visit?
It is a fascinating maze of specimens locked away in little lockers that require attention.
In a small space, isn't it?
We need more space. Absolutely.
And more volunteers.
And donations.
And donations through the endowment. But seriously, folks, if people want to get in touch with me or anyone else at the herbarium, by all means, give us a call and maybe we could schedule a visit. Or if people want to bring a plant by for identification. Did I say free identification? It's absolutely free. We do it all the time. We'd be happy to run downstairs and pick your plant up to take a look at it if you can't find a parking space. Or you can mail it to us or mail us a picture of it, that kind of thing. We do hundreds of plant identifications.
Wow.
Each year, and we like to offer this as a public service through our department.
And we will make sure to include all of the contact information for you in the subtext of the podcast, so it will be easy for our listeners to contact you, so they don't have to remember just by listening. So to give the listeners a better idea of what you do and what the herbarium really is, can you give us a little history about the herbarium?
I can. The herbarium was begun, we like to tell everybody, that it was 1907. And the reason we say that is because that's when Andrew Charles Moore began working at the newly invented Department of Biology at USC. And he was the chair of the department. He was a botanist. He began the herbarium with his own collection of plant specimens. And he's the fellow who is commemorated by A.C. Moore School. And then earlier there was a dorm on campus named after him.
Right.
And there's still a garden. The A.C. Moore Garden is at the corner of Pickens and Blossom Street.
Right.
Anyway, he started the herbarium then. He died in 1927, and his herbarium continued being added to slowly. And we've been able to pull out about 400 different specimens that we know that Moore had his hands on. That is, he prepared them or got them into the collection during his tenure there. And then following that, the collection was largely enhanced by Dr. Batson, Wade Batson, who was, I think we could call him the patron saint of botany in South Carolina. And I came on board in 1990. And it's been a lot of work since then, and it's still a very, very busy place.
So I'm going to jump around a little bit here. Anderson, when you and I were there, we got to see a lot of really cool specimens. What was your favorite?
The jasmine, South Carolina.
We saw a lot of jasmine specimens. We saw there's a lot. You have a lot of South Carolina.
A whole file folder. At least one.
And,
but there were several really pretty ones.
The reason we have a lot of specimens of our state flower is not because it's our state flower, but because it is a natural element of the flora of the state. And we want to have a good representation of that plant, Gelsemium sempervirens, throughout its range. And that means we want to have at least one specimen of that plant in each county that it occurs in.
And do the specimens change depending on where they grow? I mean,
that's one of the reasons for doing this, is just to see if there is variation between geographic localities for these different places where the plants grow. And it might involve differences in who knows what, soil moisture or proximity to a wetland, or how much the local forest system has been disturbed, that kind of thing.
Anything can really affect plant life, right? I mean, any kind
pretty
of...
Pretty much.
The amount of pollution can affect...
All sorts of environmental
effects. Water levels can affect it.
Whether they're biotic, that is involving living systems, or abiotic, things that don't really involve life so much. For instance, a flood, that would be an example of an abiotic effect.
Out of curiosity, do you know how many counties the state flower grows in?
Probably every single one of them, although there are 46 counties, but I would think that it's most common in the coastal counties. I'd have to check, because I don't know exactly.
Ooh. Ooh, fun.
Stump the botanist.
Stump the botanist. Now, that would be a fun, fun show.
Yeah.
That would be
Actually, I guess to kind of go along with that, I was curious, do you have a particular favorite specimen or plant that you find fascinating?
I do. And I have to tell you that since I was in graduate school at Clemson, I became very interested in a genus of plants that's in the mint family.
Hmm.
Not mint.
Right.
That's not what I meant. not the iced tea mint, but
right.
It's a member of the mint family, and the name of it is Stachys, or Stachys. It's spelled S-T-A-C-H-Y-S. There are about 400 species in the world. Most of them are North America, the Middle East, Eastern Africa, that kind of thing. But they're widely distributed in the world, and in South Carolina, we probably have 8 different species of it. And what my charge is since graduate school is to be sort of the guru of Stachys in North America. Mm. So I've been studying this group of plants for a number of years now. And in a sense, the rest of the botanical world, especially in North America, has been sort of leaning on me to be the expert whenever they have questions about this genus and wherever they live. So a lot of times I'll get questions about the identity of one of these, we call them hedge nettles, about the identity of one of these hedge nettles in California or someplace.
Hmm.
So that's pretty cool. But yeah, hedge nettles, that's my specialty.
Is there a particular reason why that plant kind of grabbed you?
I don't know what that involves, but I remember when I was a student of John Ferry, who was at Clemson. He said he wants me to go through this copy of the currently used botany Bible, Radford's Manual, and try to figure out what plant group you'd like to study. It's about 600 pages, and as I was flipping through that, I got to the hedge nettles. I thought, these guys look kind of interesting. And there seemed to be some questions about the taxonomy involved with them. So maybe I should study them. And I've been studying them pretty much since then.
And you got to name at
least
one.
I was going. Yeah. Naming of a species.
We have had some new hedge nettles described. In fact, a couple of years ago, I, along with my former boss, Doug Rayner, co-authored the name of a new hedge nettle that grows only in South Carolina, and it's named Stachys caroliniana.
I love this. Stachys caroliniana. And you can find information, do you have that digitized?
That specimen is...
Or is it in a book somewhere?
It's in a publication that's available to the public.
I'd love to include that publication in the podcast information at the bottom so people can find that
information. Yeah, it would be a PDF link kind of thing.
That'd be great. We'll make sure to include that.
I don't know that we have it in our... that we have digitized it yet.
That's okay. Exactly. We can include a link to where people can find it because I think they'll be interested.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it'd be fun. So what about the oldest specimen, Dr. Nelson?
The oldest specimen in the collection is probably about 1828. As far as we can tell, it came from India. And it was actually a specimen of a tropical plant that was sent to us by our colleagues at Martin Luther University in Halle, Germany. And the reason we got them to send it to us because we developed an exchange program with their herbarium so that we shipped off a bunch of specimens from South Carolina to Martin Luther University. And they sent us a bunch of interesting stuff that they had on hand. So it was a really, you know, happy way of dealing with each other, you know, hands across the ocean kind of stuff. Because we don't get off over to Germany very often to look at their collection of interesting stuff. And they don't get over here. So this is a good way for botanists to trade it around.
Sure.
But that's not your farthest reaching partnership.
No, that's a good point. Our farthest reaching partnership probably involves the nice people at Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, in which we have a similar kind of exchange program set up with the Tropical Institute of Botany in Vietnam. And it's fascinating. We're each sharing or exchanging 1,000 specimens, and we still owe them 400. They owe us 400, but it won't be long before we've completed that exchange program. Perhaps we can move on to a different country.
Sure.
As long as the space holds out.
It's time to grow.
It is.
And you know what? Another thing going along that, obviously, this field is constantly evolving. It is constantly growing. And I was curious, as somebody that's very, very interested in nature, very, very interested in the outdoors, what advice would you have to families, libraries, teachers about trying to get kids back outside and be interested in the natural?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount of interest in this, but not from enough people.
Right.
And one of the issues going on is that kids don't get outside anymore. They've always got little machines in front of them with buttons and stuff, which preoccupies them to the point that they don't have time for being outdoors. Another part of that is that I'm afraid that parents in general aren't necessarily teaching their kids an appreciation for nature. It's hard to teach an appreciation for nature if you don't already have it. So it's a matter of not only educating the little ones, but the parents as well. Mm-hmm. So it makes me think of when I was a kid, I was lucky enough to have parents that did have, you know, they did spend a good bit of time outdoors, especially my father, who was, in fact, a wildlife biologist. So I got a lot of nature background for me. But unfortunately, I think it's true that that's getting to be more rare.
It is.
I know that was some of my fondest memories growing up. I was lucky enough to grow up in a very rural area on a farm. So, you know, mm-hmm. hunting, livestock, planting, mm-hmm. understanding the wild plants and stuff, you know, yeah. we did that constantly.
When I grew up, well, we lived over there near Veterans Hospital when I was mm-hmm. a little kid. Then as I was growing up and able to be aware of interesting stuff of nature, we lived in Forest Acres when it was just being invented.
Oh, wow.
So there were still plenty of woods and creeks mm-hmm. and fields and stuff out there to be wandering around in, and I did it all the time.
Oh, I can reminisce about growing up out in the country, too, and out in Blythewood and building forts and playing fishing and boating. And,
yeah.
But alas, our time is up. It's been fun. Thank you so much, Dr. Nelson. Sean, thanks for sitting in. Anderson, loved having you here. Dr. Nelson, I am looking forward to at least one, maybe more.
Well, I'm hoping you will give me a call on the telephone.
Definitely.
Or the email on the computer and let me know what the schedule might be. Because I'm looking forward to doing some other activities.
Definitely. I want to wait until spring's a little bit and the weather warms a little bit, which will make more people come out. But we'll work out the details and we'll be in touch and we'll get you on the calendar. And I'm very excited about it. And I hope you get out there to some of our public libraries because I think they would be thrilled to have you. Today's program was awesome.
I hope they'll get in touch with me.
I hope so too. We'll put all of your contact information in the subtext of the podcast. But for now, I'm Pamela.
I'm Sean Gruber.
And we're keeping it short and sweet.